And we welcome you inside the Hoop Ball Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comente here with you alongside, as always, the incomparable, the all-knowing Jill Adge. And then also joining us today on this late night Friday, rainy day podcast that we are doing is the Kings Herald's own writer, host, friends with Jerry Reynolds. We have Will Griffith with us and defender of gold jerseys till the end of time. Right, Will?
Amen. Absolutely. Amen.
Will, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you tagging along on this.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Be sure to follow Will on Twitter. His content's great. You will know it's him because his profile picture is just garbage with one piece of the one garbage bag is gold, right?
That's what I am. I'm a golden bag of trash.
Okay. Well, I didn't say that, but you are an avid fan of gold, excuse me. So there's no question about that. Guys, let's get right into it. The Kings play the Jazz. Game just ended. That's why we hopped on and started doing this. Final score, 110-101. The Kings lose to the defending Western Conference champion, Utah Jazz. And this is the first time the Sacramento Kings have lost in any type of game, summer league, preseason, regular season, since May 16th of this year. It has been, oh man, 5 months. I had to do that math in my head, and that hurt me for some reason. It's been over 5 months since the Kings have lost a game. Of course, there's been the offseason, but they've been teasing us and spoiling us with winning all these games that don't count and then one game that counted on Wednesday. They finally lost a game against a really fucking good team. So, Will, your initial takeaways from this Friday night game?
I mean, I think, again, they played three quarters of really good basketball. They're one of those teams that's they're going to have to learn everything the hard way, it seems like. And right now, the fourth quarter is where they're falling apart. And for a team that in past years barely pretended to be competitors, this year they're competing all the way to that final buzzer. And, I don't take one way or another too much out of anything. It's early in the season. You know, the losses don't mean as much. The wins don't nearly mean as much either. It was a chippy game. It was one where nobody could really get too much of a flow. And I mean, last year they lost by 49 to basically this exact same team. And right. I'll take a 9-point loss.
I don't think they were ever close against them last year.
No. I think the average loss was like 30 points or something like that. Point. Yeah. So they played well enough to win. They just didn't execute down the stretch. And that's Kings basketball.
Yeah, and I will say, like, even so, the first two quarters of last game, and then I would say even for most of the game, like, they had some defense lapses, but I mean, all around basketball, even when they had those winning streaks and all that stuff last year, I feel like I'm watching a team play way better than they ever did at any point last year, regardless of the winning streak, losing streaks, all that. To me, if you can keep that going, you're going to give yourself a hell of a shot. Like, I know they didn't win today, and we say we hate moral victories and all that stuff, but they didn't just lose to like the worst team in the league. Like, the Jazz did what the Jazz did. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, and that's going to be the most frustrating thing about a team that's trying to turn a corner is learning how to close games, let alone learning how to close games without your, you know, one of your biggest, I'd say Holmes is a centerpiece on this team. And I don't think people realize how much the offense flows through Holmes and relies on that pick and roll game with him. And when he's off, like, the movement is very, it's almost non-existent at times. So again, like, to me, it wasn't like this team blew this lead at full capacity, right? Like, Holmes got cheap. I mean, some of those were cheap fouls, you know what I mean? Like, it's the Jazz didn't need the ref's help on that. But I would say, like, I'd be more worried if they had a full squad and, you know, they're blowing this stuff. Like, it's, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not, I'm not shortcutting everything that the team did for the rest, you know, the first three quarters. And it sucks because we keep waiting for them to learn how to close out a game. And unfortunately, that's just going to be a growing pain if they ever do actually make that turn. But it's game two. Like, there's plenty of opportunity. So
yeah. Holmes, it's not like they were playing down someone. Holmes got into foul trouble. That is like you're playing down someone, but he was there And he did come back in the fourth and then fouled out on what was pretty BS loose ball foul. He's doing his,
and there were multiple bad calls on
there were, fouls. But like, he's boxing.
I can get when you get called. And that's my biggest thing. It's like, I understand, like, if you're fouling someone, like, call the fouls, but he had at least three of them where they weren't fouls. And I think that's the most frustrating part, is that they're just cheap, and it takes a guy completely out of a game, and it just sucks.
Will, is that what you're talking about when you said that they're chippy and dirty and aggressive? I don't think you said dirty, but
no, yeah, they're a veteran team. They're one of those teams that you
and
play
works,
in
it. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, it yeah. works. I think it's just one of those games that they know. You know, you saw Fox kind of have to go to the sideline to get his shoulder worked on and stuff like that. Yep. You see Hassan Whiteside just clock Davion Mitchell off of a screen. One of those ones where it looked like he leaned into it in order to get Davion.
Looked like
on.
He extended the hand out, right?
Yeah. And so there's these things that, like, you know, as a veteran team, you can get away with. And with a rookie, maybe like Davion Mitchell, I mean, he's played enough high caliber basketball to know when there's a 7-footer floating around up at the top of the key, he's looking to crush you on a screen. But the Jazz are an intelligent team. They know how to slow a game down into their favor, whether that's through fouls or whatever else like that. Yep. And middle of the third, when things got really, like, every possession up and down the court was a foul, they knew that was to their advantage. If they could slow the clock down, right, if they could get the Kings in a little bit of foul trouble or get them out of their own heads, that benefited the Jazz. And then they executed late down the stretch. And that's a team that's led by a great coach that knows where they're going every single night down the floor.
And they know that they just have to keep a game close, right? Because they know they're more than capable enough. This is a team with this core that only lost 20 games last year. Like, I mean, that's what sucks for us, because they played so well for 75% of the game and then just couldn't close it out. And I know we're used to, you know, Fox having his takeovers, but what I want to say is I actually saw a lot more on the defensive end from him. And I think we have to get used to maybe sometimes now that we're seeing both ends of play, that he's not necessarily going to be able to give you everything that he was, right, getting on the offense. Like, that takes energy out, right? Plus he went out with, you know, the shoulder injury, but dude had 5 steals tonight. Like, I just see my timeline. Like, I know his offense wasn't there, but at least give him props for things he did. You know, like, there were things that he actually did do well in the game. It wasn't like it was just shit all around.
Let me regurgitate some stats to you guys right now. We can talk about these. I'm going to do Jill's job for her, because she's usually the stat person. But the Kings got outscored in the second half. In the third quarter, they got outscored 35-28. So +7 to the Jazz in the third, +8 to the Jazz in the fourth, 29-21. So again, the second half, they didn't keep their foot on the pedal and finish off, which is obviously, that's very difficult to do, to finish off a really, really talented Jazz team, even though you went in the half with the lead. Other things I got to throw out there. De'Aaron Fox.
And Alex Len had to play 22 minutes. Alex and a lot came from the minutes. Second half. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, that was a surprise, actually, that we saw a lot more Len, as Jill was predicting, than Thompson. The matchup was better.
But we only saw as much of him because Holmes was out. Like, we would have seen Len, but we wouldn't have seen 22 minutes of Len. Like, he got thrown into the deep end with,
and that man's ready for it.
With Rudy, you know,
he's built for it. De'Aaron, because we mentioned him, 12 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 5 of 19 from the field, 0 of 5 from 3. De'Aaron Fox struggled from 3. Davion Mitchell, some point someone's going to have to mention this. Outstanding defender. We love it. We love watching him play defense and shut down Donovan Mitchell. He has to score. He has to start putting some stats together, in my opinion. I'm going to be that person that says that. Jill, you can't play 32 minutes.
I'm not saying he doesn't have to get, but I'm saying the Kings are in trouble if they're ever relying on him to score. That's when the Kings are going to be in trouble.
He can't score. We talk so much about his defense, understandably, because he's an outstanding defender. That's his bread and butter. That's what made him known. But Davion's not a schmuck on the offensive end. He's playing like a schmuck right now. No, I'm saying he's playing like one now. And it's a bummer, because if we can get 10 points out of Davion in 32 minutes, that's more like it. Right now, in these first 2 games, it's been 2 games. He's a rookie. I understand. I'm overreacting. That's what you do after games. But one of eight
for a Kings fan, absolutely.
Absolutely. Sam, one of eight from the field, 0-4 from three. He's not really looking to shoot either. It seemed like, you know, in times when I'd want him to shoot when he had space. It's like, dude, you're killing me. I love the defense, but I know you can score, so go fucking score. I'm getting impatient.
I think that's all the Kings are asking of him right now, and that's part of the problem.
I just want to say
that's what I'm saying. Like, that's where the Kings are in trouble if they're relying on him to do more than what he's already doing. Like, I understand 5 to 10 points.
I don't want him to just play defense.
I'm all about it.
Score for
him. But that's why they drafted him. Like, that's, I mean, at the end of the day, like, and if he's playing with, but in a normal game, he's going to be playing with Buddy and Terrence and these other guys that are going to be the scorers. He's out there to put the stops on.
That's fair.
And literally, and when they throw him in at the end of the game with Halliburton and Fox, you're not going to want him to be shooting when he's on the court with those two either, unless he's wide open.
Yeah.
I think he was always meant to be. Yeah. He's supposed to be a tertiary scorer. He's not going to be the primary scorer coming off the bench. He probably won't even be the second guy if you're running a 3-guard lineup with anyone other than maybe Halliburton. But I think you're right, Sam, that, I mean, I talked about this with Damian and Kenny a couple of times that, like, the expectations on him are incredibly high right now. Yes. And he, I mean, that's a blessing and a curse, because he had a fantastic summer league. He had a fantastic preseason. So everyone gets hyped up like, oh, here we go. This is it, baby. He's a rookie of the year candidate. And it's going to take him some time, whether he's 23 years old or 19 years old, it's going to take him some time to adjust in the league. I kind of expected this from him on the offensive end, but I also didn't expect him to be as good as he is on the defensive end these first two games either.
Okay.
I mean, so to me, it's kind of one of those things that, like, I think he can go one of eight as the primary, you know, backup. If Terrence Davis has a game where he doesn't just go absolutely buck wild, like a dog let off the leash sometimes, and Buddy doesn't have four turnovers. And the other thing is Joe Ingles being an intelligent, and just to scoop back that point for a second, Joe Ingles took him out at the hips, and
I don't know how he didn't break his wrist.
Yeah, he was flexing his wrist and stuff.
He landed all body on those wrists. You rarely see guys get up and able to come out of that.
I thought he was going to get a concussion protocol or something on him after that Hassan screen. So they're beating him up early to kind of test his mettle a little bit to see, okay, yeah, how off night can it be when you're seeing out your ear hole?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's one of those things that after the Hassan screen, I went, okay, I want to see where he goes from now on. And one of eight's not good, Sam. You're absolutely right. If you had another backup point guard,
if you
had another guy who as a primary ball handler, then you could just, this is a time where you'd, you know, I know Kings fans don't like this name, but if you had Corey Joseph, you could pull Davion Mitchell. Okay, Corey Joseph, go out there. You know, all these point guards of years past, you know, Andre Miller, you want to go out there and slow everything way down and toss out passes. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But they don't. They're leaning on Davion Mitchell to be that guy that first year. And so far, he's still adjusting to the league.
I think. And to your point, Sam, I do think that he might be more efficient where to me, there were some times where he was turning down better shots and then like
find a teammate.
And then there were times he drove in, right? And then kind of forced something that wasn't where it was just take, and that's part of the learning, right? Take the first read. Like that's, again, like to me, like if we keep seeing that stuff, I get it. I still can't believe we keep saying we wanted to see him do this on defense against the best in the league. And it's a hell of like your first two games, Portland and the Jack, like, and then you're getting
Golden
thrown
State
into what,
tomorrow,
the Sun, Golden State. Like, I mean, that's a hell of a welcome to the NBA, rookie, like, and you're expected to shut these guys down with your off night.
And again, to clarify, because Jill, you can attest to this, people that listen, I've obviously been very in the corner of Davion Mitchell I've tweeted that I wouldn't even trade him for Ben Simmons. I like him that much. And I like his vibe and how he fits this team.
You did say that.
However, I'm going to go back to this, Will, because you credited it to 32 minutes and you score 3 points. I just see that and I vomit a little bit in my throat because I'm like, dude, how do you only, but you're exhausting yourself doing your job, which is to play defense and guard Donovan Mitchell. He's one of the top players in the league. And I completely understand that. again, I'm being an asshole here for no reason, just to nitpick. Because
I think it's more noticeable when Fox is hurting on the offensive end, right? Because then you need someone else to
right. And the bench come up, right? For the second game in a row, the bench was only pretty much Buddy Hield scoring points and nobody else. And obviously Davion's on the bench. So it's like
Davis wasn't on the bench.
And Davis struggled and then had foul trouble. So it was just one of those games where, if they win and other guys play better, 32 minutes, 3 points, but he's playing outstanding defense, cool. I don't care. In this game, it's more like standing out to me because it's like we could have used.
To me, I think their real Achilles heel the whole game, regardless of anyone's individual play, was the turnover, the pass. Like, they would make great defensive stops and then 15 times, one after another, making a bad pass.
Aggressive outlet passes.
From a great defensive stop. And like you probably come away with this win, right? Like if you cut those in half, I mean, it was 15 times. Like you would think after you saw like two or three, you would stop doing it. But it just kept going.
You know, and I expect it from Buddy Hield only because he's kind of fitting into a new position as the microwave off the bench.
Sure.
And four turnovers, like, okay, they were kind of relying on him to be a ball handler a little bit more. But even somebody like Tyrese Halliburton, threw a couple that were like cross court, like looking for that home run outlet, and they were picked off pretty easily. And it was like, whoa, like his start to the season has been underwhelming. He had a much better game tonight, but it was one of those things that I went, you got some nerves still in you, buddy. And maybe that's because he's finally playing in front of a crowd, you know, an away crowd. And then, you know, his first night in front of a Sacramento crowd, but it was one of those things that they were a little un-Halliburton-like. And he tossed a couple really, really bad ones.
Even Harrison too had three, and that's super rare for him as well, right? Like that you're not usually seeing him making those kind of errant passes. But again, I know we're we're talking all this stuff, but again, like it was the Jazz and they almost had it. Like,
and it was opener.
Like we're still seeing them play so much better than they were. Like that.
Yes.
We have plenty of the season to be the doom and gloom, but I will say that like I'm holding on to the hope because I have like, this is the best I've seen this team play on two sides of the court in years.
Jill, have you ever been doom and gloom? I feel like, I don't know if I've ever seen you be doom
when
and
gloom. I do, like it just happens and like
it flows in and out.
Like I just got to vomit it out and then I'm back. Like I just got to purge it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm back. I'm back because why else am I here? Like, because for me, like I can't hold on to that. Like, otherwise I'm like, I wouldn't be able to keep doing this every day. Like it would be completely meltdown. And so you got to have some of us stay, you know, level it out for everybody. Like I was getting that today.
For me right now,
level headed
stuff. Sadness. So Mo Harkless did not play. He had soreness from his fall in Portland. So Will, I was curious, and Jill, what did you guys think of how Luke Walton set this starting lineup today with Terrence Davis, not Buddy Hield, going into the starting five?
I liked it in the fact where you're trying to get Buddy to accept the sixth man role. Yeah. Keep it going. Like I get injuries, like I get it. We all figured this probably the time you do it. But if you're really trying to get a guy to buy into a role, I'm happy he stuck with it. And I totally understood it if that was the standpoint of why he did it. And I think it was smart. And Buddy is continuing to show that he is made for that role. Like whether he totally likes it, I don't know. But like, I mean, you just keep seeing it, you know, from the previous season and two games now that like, he thrives in this kind of role. So I was happy that he kept it.
Will,
you know, to Jill's point, I think she's right in that regard. If it is to kind of continue to make Buddy Hield comfortable in his role off the bench, it worked for Buddy. I mean, he was 6 of 15 from three. He talked about being a star in your role. And I think Buddy Hield tonight, I mean, even some of the, he had a nice little up and under over, you know, around Gobert. He was crashing the basket. Like, I think he did a good job. Terrence Davis to me is always kind of the wild card. If he's playing well and he's and he's focused. You know, if his play is very like, hey, the Kings have a puncher's chance than any team in the league. If Terrence Davis is Terrence Davis, like Greg
those tweeted wild.
Out. Yeah. Greg tweeted out, Greg Wissinger tweeted out that Jordan Clarkson is who Terrence Davis thinks he is.
Yeah.
And I responded to him that Michael Jordan is who Terrence Davis thinks he is. Because I think there's sometimes where Terrence Davis just, his eyes get real big and that bucket gets real small. And I mean, it's fine. Again, I feel like we don't have to keep prefacing this by saying it's the second game. Sure. I'd much rather it be the second game.
The second game than 100%.
If we're 67 games into the season and Terrence Davis is still playing like Terrence Davis and Buddy Hield is scoring 24 off the bench or 17 off the bench on a given night, I might throw Buddy Hield, you know, as we get towards a playoff stretch or whatever. I would definitely switch that out in that case. I'm not predicting a playoff stretch.
Well, it's the second game, dude. Calm down.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily the positive one in this in the Kings fandom, but tonight it was fine. And I think it worked well enough.
It does make me laugh to say, because I agree with both of you saying that, you know, it's getting Buddy used to that role off the bench, but it just, my mind is just goes right to like trying to get a child to understand like why you're teaching them a lesson. It's like, we don't want to confuse them. Like, let's stick with this path. We don't want them to get any mixed ideas. It's like, that's how they're approaching. Like, let's not confuse Buddy, this full grown man, an NBA player. We don't want him to misunderstand what we're doing. We're going to keep him on the bench. And it's right. That's right to do. I think.
Get him Matt in Barnes role, brought get him it up mindset. In the, yeah. Matt Barnes just, brought it up in the pregame too, that as a, he said that as a player, like you need that.
Yeah.
Like if you're trying to get a guy, to buy into a new role, you need that consistency and,
don't play tricks with them,
you know,
don't play with his emotions. But the Kings made 8 threes though. We have to say that was one stat I forgot to leave out. The Jazz made 16, double the amount of threes. That math I can do. Jazz were 16 of 42, 38%. Kings 8 of 36 from three. They're going to shoot a lot of threes. We know they are every game. That's a Luke Walton thing, an Alvin Gentry thing. Shoot threes. You make 8 threes out of 36 and the other team makes 16. Yeah, you're going to lose that game every time. Every time. Turnovers be damned. That is a stat that really killed them.
You know, I would have been fine if the Jazz just defended well on the perimeter. But on top of that, Buddy hit 6 of them.
Yeah,
so outside of Buddy Hield, you had Harrison Barnes 40%. Too, and no one else could.
Harrison Barnes made the other 2 threes.
Yeah. That's where it hit you. Yep.
And that's where it's like, okay, if a few people had 2 or 1 or whatever, okay, then it was just a bad night for the team. But like, this was a terrible night from behind the line for the Kings.
Yes.
It's something that cannot be sustainable.
There were 4 other guys that attempted threes and they all went over. So yes. 0 for 2, 0 for 5, 0 for 4, 0 for 4. 4. Like, the fact they were even close.
Yeah, that's actually, like, I'm impressed now.
With how many the Jazz are known for making threes, but that we only had 2 people make threes and the rest went over and it was still a game to the end. Yeah. I guess. I mean that, but, and we did that against Gobert, right?
Yeah.
Like against a good sized team.
We out rebounded him too, Jill.
They took advantage of it.
By 1 rebound, but we did out rebound the Jazz.
Last year they like out rebounded us almost like by 20 a game.
Yeah.
So again, progress, right? Like we're seeing.
Yeah.
I thought Bagley and Len came in and did a great job on the boards. Like they did a bunch of the little things in there. So kudos to those two for staying ready, right? They didn't get any minutes that first game. And Luke had said that he's going to be tight with his rotations, but I will say props to him on this one. Like I'll give him his kudos that I felt last game he could have extended a little bit more to Len and he didn't. And this game he matched the bodies a little bit more and you saw that it was effective. So I don't even know if I have to say appreciate that, but like, thank you for extending the rotation and matching it up because it worked. Right. So I hope to kind of keep seeing that between that core set of guys of there are going to be games, right, where I don't think that you need to use them, but against these, there are a few teams, right, that just have huge big guys and length. And this was the one. So I liked his rotations essentially. Yeah.
I don't know if he'll need to use Len again for the Warriors, but Will Bagley, speaking of Marvin Bagley, played 10 minutes, 2 points, had a bucket, 4 rebounds. He was actually plus 3 in 10 minutes of play. So there's that stats. What did you think of Bagley's presence on the court for while he was out there?
You know, I think he looked, I'll say it this way. I'm very glad that Marvin Bagley got to play tonight. I'm very glad that he got to go out in front of a Sacramento Kings crowd that seemed to be fairly positive towards him.
Yeah.
I was a little nervous that you'd hear more boos than woohoos, and it didn't sound that way. He's somebody that needs to be accepted, whether it's here or wherever he ends up in the long run. That being said, I don't think he played very well. I mean, he was engaged, which was nice. You know, he wasn't moping. He wasn't dragging his feet. He wasn't trying to pull a Ben Simmons. He wasn't tanking his time out on the court.
Pocket.
Yeah, but he had a really bad turnover that, you know, you could tell he was trying to make that extra pass. And it was like, man, this guy just, you know, he just can't buy anything right now. I'm glad, just for the sake of trolling his agent, I guess, that he did get some time, and I had hoped that he'd, this is a situation where I was like, all right, just put that, he had that big dunk that they waved off because of he was pushing off on Mike Conley, but like, I wish that would have gone down. Like, he deserves at least one of those buckets. And I'm somebody who does not like him very much as a prospect or as a personality, but it was one of those things that was like, you know, he probably deserved that one, and he didn't get it. I have my bar for Marvin Bagley's in the dirt, and so today he showed up and he worked hard, and even if it was a turnover and a waved off dunk, that's fine. Like, he did a decent job. Good job.
Yeah. Sorry, Jill. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, yeah. I just happened to see. I happened to catch a tweet from Tony Jones, who covers the Athletic for the Jazz. And it caught my eye because it said Davion Mitchell is incredible, in all caps, defender. So it's nice to see, like, we've been seeing
he's trending for sure.
We've been seeing this from other teams, beat writers, that like, holy crap, he really is as advertised in there. So sorry. Yeah. That just popped up on my thing. And I was like, all right, like, rookie's getting some love, you know, there we go. Yep. Like, it's
what popped up on nice my thing. See. That's, I don't know if you guys can see this. We have like a time limit now on this Zoom meeting. I don't know if this is coming up on your end.
Oh, 9 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of funny. It startled me. I was like, I didn't know that this could exist, but that's like, that's perfect. That's fine. We know how much time we want to use to wrap it up and finish talking about it. Like now they're counting us down literally in the Zoom meeting. I don't know what just happened. But anyway, I wanted to shift gears anyway, and looking ahead to the Warriors game, Will, taking everything we have here, it is a lot of positives, absolutely more positives than negatives if we're really breaking it down from this game, this first loss to the Jazz.
Yeah.
How do you like their chances, Will and Jill? I like these two names together. That works. Will and Jill. How do we like their chances against a Warriors team that all of a sudden is now the shit again? Like, everyone's talking about the Warriors. Fucking hate it, because I love those 2 years where nobody really mentioned them except for Steph. Steph deserves all the love in the world, but they're good. They're a really good team, especially when Steph doesn't miss. So they play Golden State on Sunday at Golden One. Are we going to be 1-2, 2-1? Will, you don't need to make a necessary prediction, but how are you feeling?
You know, if Steph Curry scores 25 points in the first quarter, I feel like the Kings aren't going to have much of a chance. If he goes 9-for-9 and 4-for-4 from three, I think it's going to be a long, long night. But, I think the Kings now, if anything else, Joe kind of mentioned this earlier, I think the way they're playing is sustainable. You know, it's not like they're doing anything crazy on one end of the floor or another. They need to shore up their second half, which is where Steph Curry is going to absolutely point to like, oh, I'm going to go off in the third quarter. But, I mean, they have a puncher's chance always right now until they just absolutely get blown out and you can get, you know, you see, oh, this is exactly where the hole is and this is where everyone's going to be going for them.
Yeah.
You know, do I expect a win? Absolutely not. Will I predict a win here? No. In my preview, always.
But, in private? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, it's just one of those things that I think this will be another one of those things that if Davion Mitchell comes out, like, this for me is like, oh, Dame was a nice test, and Donovan Mitchell was a good test. It's like, now this is the one that I want to see. Like, I want to see him just bother the hell out of Steph Curry. And even if Steph hits some crazy three like he's going to hit and scores 25 points or 30 points, I just want to see Steph Curry bothered all night.
Yeah.
There's nothing sweeter to me than watching him just be pissy about something.
And the way that Curry moves like a gnat, like around the court, right? Like, if he can, I will not ask anything on the offensive side of him if he can literally, same, if he will be like just running after him. I want to know if someone can actually keep up with the guy, because we've never seen anybody do it. Like there hasn't been anyone that's been
enter
able to.
Enter Davion Mitchell.
So, you know.
The other thing like, about Davion, I mean, is he's got a low center of gravity. He's built like a, I mean, he's stacked. He is a brick.
Yeah.
And Steph can kind of push off on some of these guys that guard him. You know, Pat Beverly, he can kind of get tangled up with and kind of shove off. Davion's not going anywhere. He's planted. And so, yeah, I think Jill, you're right. If he can keep up with him, that's going to be, the Kings could lose by 30, but if Steph is bothered, I'll take the moral yeah. victory and be happy about it.
Yeah. I would love to be the first one to knock them off. Like that would be fun. But
yeah. They're on their California tour right now. They beat the LA teams and they're just working through the state. I guess the Kings are the only one left, right? Unless I'm missing a team.
Yeah. You know what? At least our guys stuck together, didn't get in a fight on the bench tonight. You know, we're on national TV. Like, you know, we're already one of us so far from what other teams were doing tonight. So, you know,
a little wink at the Lakers there from Jill.
You know, one more
they're
point.
Already a dumpster fire. What's that?
One more point about the Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of Steph, nobody's playing very well. Like,
no,
Andrew Wiggins is averaging less than 15. Like, Steph is averaging 33, and then it's Wiggins at 14.5 and Jordan Poole at 14.5. And, like, Jordan rules Steph Curry. Do that. Get 65 for Steph Curry, and nobody else gets more than 5 or 6. Then we stand a chance.
Steve Kerr came out to say, and I appreciate Steve Kerr as a basketball player, basketball coach. He does say a lot of shit that angers me and annoys me. And I'm like, that's shut up. That's not true. And what he said today or yesterday, I should say, after the game, after the 75 anniversary list was released, is that he believed Klay Thompson, which I can agree on that, but he believes Klay Thompson and Draymond Green deserve to be on the 75 best players in NBA history on a list that includes obviously Steph, James Harden, Elgin Baylor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, every great player ever in the NBA. Steve Kerr sat at a podium and said, yeah, also Draymond Green should be on the list. No, he should
Dwight
fucking
not
be.
Dwight had the most gripe out of anybody.
What's that?
I still imagine that fight was Dwight saying, I deserve to be on the 75 over
that,
AD.
That would be hilarious.
That's
and
how I envision
and it's
that
true, Jill.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And he's right. I envision that's what was said. And I'm 100% with Dwight on that.
You think Dwight Howard should be on the list?
People do not realize his first 8 years in the league – like he was, there was a whole list, I think of, I think it was 50 players of guys that have made, it was like, I don't know if it was all NBA 8 times, but it was something 8 times. There's a whole list of 50. Dwight was the only one out of the 15, not in the 75. Like, I mean, people don't realize that guy's resume at the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
It's
unstoppable, and no one else could match up against him.
Regardless of how you feel about the guy,
he deserved
to be there.
And there are people on that list that, you know, they've shown highlights of these guys from like the 50s, and they're playing on, you know, courts that
hilarious
are just like, it's like someone's kitchen. You know, there's no lines; it's just a half court line. The 3-point line wasn't invented yet. It's like,
that's
why
where I'm gonna okay. I'm gonna throw. Now that you
who
just
knows
said
that
the old time thing,
yeah.
You're not going to like this, but I'm going to throw in my water cooler just from that one, because
okay,
you mentioned an old one. Did you
know
at one point in the game? Okay. This is it. At one point in the game, after every made basket, it was a jump shot. You didn't take the ball out. It was a jump shot. I mean, a jump ball.
Oh, I was like,
it was a jump. Sorry. Yes. So after every made basket, it was a jump ball to determine who got it next. It wasn't, let's take it out.
Of what bounds. Do we do now,
it
guys?
Was literally a jump ball. Can you imagine watching a game and after every basket, let's do a jump ball.
That's insanity. Jump ball.
Like, can you imagine that now watching?
I don't think I could.
Sorry, that blew my mind when I saw that one. Like, what?
I don't think I could legitimately
it
sit down and watch
1 year.
A basketball game from 1952. I'd be like, these guys are slow. They suck. Everything, I'm like, where are they shooting from? This court is confusing because it's just literally all the same. There's no markings. Will, we have under 2 minutes on this time table. Again, I have no idea. I think Zoom wants me to pay for me to stay longer on this thing. I will not be doing that. Screw the government. No, I'm just kidding. But also kind of being serious. You have a minute and 30 seconds, we'll say, to defend the golden jerseys, Will. This is your time.
Oh, my gosh.
It is yours on a time frame. I'm sorry. I didn't expect this. but go.
You know what? I don't even need a minute and 30 seconds. If you want me to defend the jerseys from 2006, it's going to be a little bit harder to do. Those were bad jerseys. They weren't all-time bad jerseys. They were just bad jerseys in the era. A lot of people, it's a meme now to make fun of those and like, oh, they make me vomit. They're just bad jerseys. They're just a little bit worse than the other boring jerseys that the Sacramento Kings have had over the years. Because the Kings have, outside of those black jerseys that we have, you know, the greatest show on court type jerseys, Kings have never had anything other than mediocre jerseys. Oh man, I see less than 1 minute. I'm getting,
I don't know,
I'm getting nervous here.
I'm getting nervous. Go, you got it. I got faith.
Okay, this Sacramento is the starting place for the Gold Rush. One of the biggest moments in modern American history started in Sacramento over gold. They are also the Kings. If you're going to tie two things together that involve gold, the Gold Rush and the Kings are perfect together. I'm not asking for a full gold jersey. You've heard of Disney's frozen head, right? That Disney, when he died, they cut off his head and they froze it cryogenically until they could later find out what's going on. There's always that rumor that the reason why Disney created the movie Frozen, you know, Elsa, Let It Go, is so that when you Googled Disney Frozen, instead of popping up with Disney's frozen head, it comes up with Disney's Frozen and Elsa. And they play so much of that so that you can never, ever talk about Disney's frozen head again. It's the same way with the Kings jersey. Get one good gold accented jersey. And you know what they'll never talk about again? Those terrible, crappy gold jerseys. Oh my gosh. Oh, the mustard color. All you got to do is have one good gold accented jersey. And one, you've already turned around the greatest mishap in Kings history in terms of jerseys. But then you also have a good jersey that makes sense for the Sacramento Kings. You cannot talk about the 49ers and their epic colors and, oh, everybody loves the 49ers jerseys when they have gold in them, when the true gold should only be two teams, the Denver Nuggets that have their rainbow jerseys. That's their signature forever and forever. That's fine. The Sacramento Kings are the only ones that can claim gold as their jersey. And they do it because some group of fans cries about how bad one set of jerseys were 15 years ago. Guys, get over it.
This shouldn't be free. This should not be free content. That was unbelievable, Will.
Shout out to Mary for
being a part of this golden army that I'm slowly growing. She looked great. Mary, great job. Fantastic job. She said she met a couple other people with them. Shout out to anyone who has
I didn't see that. That's awesome.
No one can see the visuals here on this podcast, but I'm pretty confident that Will didn't blink. He just stared into Jill and I's soul for that whole time, just digging it into us.
You will like the gold jersey.
Yeah, and I was hypnotized. I blacked out. I don't remember anything that just happened. Suddenly, I really want a gold jersey. That was
subliminal messaging, right? You had the subliminal message in the background as you're listening.
That was a little like history lesson there, Will, that I was totally oblivious to. So I guess
I got five more rounds in the chamber. Anytime you want me to come back and argue more, I can.
That was just your opening, huh? That was your opening.
That was the thesis statement.
Yo, that's my hook. And you guys are so in. You've so bought my bullshit. None of that was true. Well, thank you. That was great. I can't think of another way to end the show. I feel like that has to end there.
Thank you so much for giving me the chance.
Yeah, I have other things that we could technically do, but no, that's the disservice to you and the people. And you are Will of the people.
I'm of the people.
Of the people.
Yeah.
Right?
Not T-H-E, but
right. Well, the spelling's overrated. Grammatical spelling. I don't know if you saw the description for the last episode that Jill and I did, but I wrote that in there as like a teaser to you. I said, we tease our guests, and in parentheses, I said, he claims to be of the people. Ooh, and that's all I said. So obviously, you know that what I was doing, but I don't think anyone got the reference. That's okay.
Of the
I
people in the psych ward. Yeah.
Yeah. I try to be super witty in our descriptions. If you follow this podcast and you listen to it, you don't need to, of course, just listen to it. But I put some time into it, the descriptions, to try and be stupidly funny in my writing. And I think it's good. But you know what? Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
Sam, I promise you, it's always worth it. I, for years, would, in the back of the old site I used to write for, we used to be able to change the URLs.
Yeah, so what, those were the best.
So what I would do was just, I would just sneak this, or I would just talk as much shit as I could in the URLs. It was just like, hey, dash Lakers, dash fans, dash, you know, whatever I wanted to say, anything that was inappropriate, anything that I knew they'd get mad at, I just put it right there in the URL. So any Lakers perfect. Fan that shared the article, they'd share an article and look at the art, the big, what are you doing, man? Did you see the URL? Like,
it was amazing. So, they were amazing.
The Easter eggs, that was my favorite thing I did.
So. Well, you are a man of Easter eggs too. I have to give you credit for the location where you're located, according to your Twitter. You're stuck in the past.
Yes, I am. Stuck in the
2001, 2002 Western Conference Finals. Yes, I don't miss many Easter eggs. I'm a big Marvel fan, so I will catch the Easter eggs, and you, my friend, are definitely one that will lay them out there. So keep doing it, though. Like, I love playing this game.
Awesome. Well, anytime you guys want to have me back, I'm happy to be back. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, and thank you, thank you, thank you. Please go follow Will. Go follow the Kings Herald. Read their content. Listen to Will's podcast with Jerry Reynolds. All good stuff.
And Tony, yep.
And Tony. I'm just discrediting Tony for no reason. Tony, who was our first guest too. So thank you. Tony Zipteris, now that I know how to say his last name. And that's going to do it for us on this late Friday post-game podcast episode of the Hoop Ball Sacramento Kings. We got games on Sunday and then all next week again. The fun doesn't end, guys. It feels like it's been a very eventful week and it's been two games. I'm not mentally or emotionally prepared for what's coming. So that's just put out there for everyone. Hug me if you see me. You guys have a great weekend. Slater dudes.